Hello, everyone. Welcome back. You just tuned in to Set for Success with your host, me, Richard Lannan. We're going to continue our journey to help you create a roadmap to change your business, career, or life. And we're going to do this through chatting to one person at a time to uncover people's lives, their business, their journey, their successes to help you create the success that you deserve. It's a Set for Success quote time. One of my most exciting things I love to do, actually. People and businesses just get in their own way, making terrible decisions or just doing stupid things. All they need to learn is to get out of their own way. Just get out of your own way. Now, that's a quote from Andrew Lannan. If you haven't guessed, the names are similar. So Andrew Lannan is my dad. He is local professional engineering technician for the U.S. Navy, a successful entrepreneur having built a diversified micro-business environment, a DIY, do-it-yourselfer of a lot of home projects, and a fly fisherman, one of his favorite things. And this man is 96 years of age, and I still phone him now and ask him for advice and discuss things with him. He's got all these faculties. It's sort of pretty cool, actually. So why did I use this quote, you might ask? Well, when I think of performance, I don't often think about the industry guru who wrote 1,000 books and everyone is running off to see because, well, they have the answer. I have never agreed to the herd mentality of running off to see some guru or blindly following some leader because everyone else is. I've lived in the country, born and raised, and I can tell you right now directly, I know what happens to a herd. What I do know is that we should listen to our elders, especially the wise owl. In this case, when it comes to performance, I don't think of the guru. Like I said, I think of my dad, and maybe even your dad. As a business strategist and working with clients, I find myself quoting my dad, telling clients that that decision, lack of action or attitude, you're getting in your own way. You need to get out of your own way and focus on what is important here. I share this short personal story of a man, my dad at 96, who has lived, loved, lost, and won, just like most people in their lives. I think that can apply to almost anybody. Just maybe when it comes to performance and focus, you too might have someone you can look to for help to improve and move on. And I don't think that person necessarily maybe found the answers in the book. If they're an elder, they have lived, they know, so show them some respect. So today, we're going to continue or be discussing some elements of performance and focus with my guest, Tim Kist.
Kist.
See, there we go. Tim, I did it again. Tim Kist. Assisting businesses to build on their strengths and creating a game plan for success. And I got to know Tim a little bit in the sense of one of the questions that he asked. I found this on his LinkedIn profile. What is standing in the way of great business performance? So, Tim, I think that's what we're going to talk about today. Great business
Sounds
performance
great.
Or great performance overall. Tim, we always start off with a sort of open question and everything and about telling us a little bit about yourself. So why don't we just start there and that's where we'll go.
Sure.
Give us a little bit of opening about who you are.
Thanks very much, Richard. Great to be here back with you again on the
one-year anniversary. Yes, I do want to say that Tim did join me previously, and I like to bring guests back about a year later and find out what's new and what's updated and everything in their lives, especially when I, you know, say their name incorrectly. But we talked about that, how, you know, I'm not quite alive right now.
But it's early.
It's actually later if they're listening to the show. We'll explain that later. But Tim, go ahead. Talk about yourself
a
little bit.
I am a certified management consultant. I have my own consulting practice, been over 6 years now with TK3 Consulting. The three stands for review, refocus, and let's revitalize and get people excited about things again, too. Recharge, sorry. And I'm with you.
Yeah, you're on my...
I haven't had my coffee. You've got your coffee going here.
That's funny you say revitalize. I actually got excited and then you go recharge. So maybe you should make it four.
I should change that. That's
change
for sure.
That too.
Work I do is focused with a variety of organizations and it tends to focus, I'll call it marketing from a pure perspective, but it's customer-based. Everything comes from a customer base. If you don't have any customers, you don't have a business. So let's make sure you understand your paying customers and then your internal customers need to understand that relationship and you need to treat those internal people really well. getting
interesting fact. I mean, just before we actually got on the air, you and I were sort of riffing on a few ideas and thoughts, right? I know somebody, one of my business associates friends, introduced me to the word riffing. So now that's become my new conversation word. We're going to riff on this for a while. But we were talking about some interesting stats around customers and the perception of business leaders or owners and customers' view. Could you just sort of state what those stats are?
The first one for me that was most telling was Forrester Research did a study a couple of years ago, worldwide CEOs, and 91% of the CEOs said that they believe their company is customer focused, but only 10% of the customers actually said those companies were customer focused. And we were talking then, the next piece is employees and...
We were talking about employees and business leaders and communications and what that might be like, too.
And it's kind of the same sort of disparity that exists. The CEOs think that, oh, we have great communication, and 10% of the employees say, we
have
good... 90% is not very good. So there's you know, these discrepancies. And getting back to your opening point about getting out of your own way, and relating it just a quick bit back to the business that I do, it's assessing if you, it's very hard to read the label when you're inside the bottle, and CEOs are inside the bottle. There's nobody else they can chat with often. Board has expectations. It's looking for that somebody else that they can chat with at a leadership level. And when you have that opportunity for that sober second thought, you see it in your career as a consultant. It's that outside perspective that brings balance to them and oftentimes uncovers something that they would not otherwise see, which then says, great, now at least we know what we have to address and we can get moving on that.
Yeah, and that's the more the formal sort of the assessment evaluation piece and understanding, you know, what you need to address. But going to the point that you've also made, and I feel we're sort of jumping ahead in the interview a little bit, but that's okay. We'll play around. You know, one of the things I often find with clients is that sometimes they'll just phone you up because they need somebody to talk to. And they're just, they're bending your ear. That's it. And they don't want you to do anything.
Right. And it's that listening component of it. I think you're exactly right, Richard. Sometimes when you start that conversation, and it might just be that open-ended question and let them go, and they just need an outlet, and they need somebody that they feel confident, and it gets back to that trusted advisor perspective, and they believe that they have that trust with you and that they're able to open up and share some of those things. And often that's it. They just want to hear, acknowledge, and then they're okay and they can move forward with it.
Yeah, and if we put this in perspective for the people, our audience listening, who are not business people, but just think about your own personal life. I mean, basically what we're going to talk about right now, and we might add it into performance from a business perspective, but what if you're an athlete? You know, what if your adult son or daughter is an athlete? I mean, performance, whether we're talking about business or athletics or personal life development, pretty much all the same concepts can be applied.
Absolutely. Yeah. Both of my boys played university football. I played and coached at that level as well. And I really understand. And a lot of times, you know, a player has a bad game or bad practice. And sometimes that coach just needs to listen on the way out of the field.
Awesome. You know what we're going to do, Tim? We're actually going to take a short break and we're going to come right back and continue the discussion.
Sounds good.
Please tune back in. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm hanging out today with Tim Kist. Did I get it right that time, Tim?
Absolutely.
All right.
Quick learner.
Yeah, well, that's because you told me, I'm going to say this on air for you. You said, just think of Sunkist Orange.
That's
and
right.
I went, I love Sunkist Oranges. So there you go.
Yep.
You know, what? Out of curiosity, why didn't you not call your company Sunkist?
I figured there might be some other trademark issue that I would be violating. So
yeah, probably. But and I don't know if that was, I don't even know if you thought of that or not, but
it's probably on the list. I had a long list of names when I was thinking about it.
There is another company out there, and I'm not going to state it, the name of the company. We'll just put in the physical fitness side. And the color orange is in the name. Mm-hmm. And so I've often thought, well, wow, that's, you know, how did you get that into your name and some of that? But that's not what we're talking about today. You know, an interesting thing that in the first segment you mentioned to me was, and to our listeners, was just about customer-centric focus. That's the words I'm going to use for it. Like,
sure.
the disparity between what the CEO sees or the business owner, because we can get past using the word CEO. We can use the word business owner, because there's lots of $2 to $5 million businesses out there, and there's lots of $25 million businesses, and there's lots of, $250,000 businesses,
right.
And I suspect it might be the same thinking might be going on no matter what level you're looking at, where there's that disparity between the business owner / leaders thinking about customers and customers' view of the business itself.
I would completely agree with you on that one, Richard. And there's this whole focus on understanding the customer journey and building personas and things like that. And that's great to a point, but I find it really difficult to aggregate people too much and only deal with that aggregation. I don't believe that you really get to know your customer well enough. You have to get out and see them interact and use your product or service. You need to be spending a lot of Chico Marx once said, who are you going to trust, me or your own eyes? And this is the same sort of thing. So you can get people's comments on survey tools and Facebook and other digital mediums, but unless you actually validate that with some firsthand experience, I don't think you have a really good perspective on what the customer is trying to accomplish and how your product or service is going to fit in there. Backing it into the organization itself, once you have that good, solid understanding of your paying customer, your employees need to understand their purpose, regardless of if they have direct customer contact or if they're a support department like IT or finance.
Yeah.
That whole avenue has to be very, very clear and tight so that people understand what I do could have an impact on what our customers perceive of us.
Yeah, it's sorry, I'm just going to put it into this context for you. It's the connection between the strategic, the tactical, and operational. That's what I'm hearing you say. It's that
yes.
Linkage between the whole organization. And I think we often hear that. We hear words like alignment. We hear words like linkage, connection. But you think with all of the work that we've done in this space that, some of these issues would have been solved by now.
But we're humans, and different things in our lives, different things in our businesses. Customers make changes, and we have competition out there. We have competitors that in many cases we've never thought of before that suddenly enter our space and try and take our customers away from us. So there's a lot of factors that get into play, and if you're not constantly keeping an eye on the horizon, you might not see what's coming, and that could have an impact on what your customers perceive of you. You might now not be delivering, and it has an impact on your employees. If you start losing customers, your employees will start to get a little bit scared and concerned, oh gosh, does that mean downsizing? What else is going to happen? So that purpose and getting people to make sure they feel confident and comfortable feeding in information about customer changes or insights or feelings and perceptions that they have that need to be further validated can really help a leader understand what's going on in the dynamic. A leader can't do it alone. Get out of your own way, but make sure you have people there that can really help you.
Yeah, people that are going to help you get out of your own way. Because it's interesting, I would say, because in essence, you're getting into perception. And as part of that perception, we can often see what we want to see and think what we want to think, but that's not really what's going on in the customer's mind.
Well, we put those biases in place. In the last couple of years, one of the areas for me that's been most fascinating to change and look at is the whole concept of behavioral economics.
Okay.
So rather than have people in traditional economics, as an econ, Richard Thaler, the Nobel Prize winning behavioral economist, it's more about other things that are happening that you can't really understand without in-depth study, and then try and apply that in a business sense. And I might have a pattern personally of doing certain things every day, and something happened that night, the dog got up or my wife got up early or something happened, and now that pattern has been disrupted. Well, is there something that can predict that? No, we have to understand how to adapt when people make changes.
Yeah, that's all those people dynamics components that are actually going on. It's interesting you would say that because you brought me back to my early university years. I'm sorry to make this about me a little bit, but I did my first degree in sociology and economics. And I would have actually people say to me, like, that's sort of a crazy degree to actually do. Like, why would you do that, right? But I once had another doctor of psychiatry, I knew, a friend of mine, and he looked at me and said, given everything you've done in your career, that was a perfect fit for you. And
yeah.
The reason why, it's not I don't want to take this out of the context of me. The reason why is that it was really about understanding the social aspect of the business, the group dynamics, and the business aspects of the business, right? The micro and macroeconomics yes. components, and then blending those together. And I think in a way, that's sort of what you're saying that needs yes. to sort of happen.
Yep.
I know it's a long way around to that, but yeah.
I think you were,
ahead of my time.
Well, absolutely. You know, since you graduated about, what, 5 years ago?
So
five years early.
Let's try 30.
But I think you've hit on something that it's as much as we want to with, you know, especially these digital tools that we have available, we want to slot things in and make them so perfect and structured and everything else. And people are not perfect and structured. We're human. We make mistakes. We do things differently. We have emotion. Different triggers that happen, and how, as an organization, do you manage that? You can have the greatest employee, and then suddenly something happens, and
then what do you do from there?
Yeah.
So I think what we'll do is we'll take a short break, and we'll come back, and we'll talk about how do you manage that.
Perfect.
Richard Land for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone. I'm hanging out with Tim. Tim is a management consultant in the area of performance, and we've been talking a little bit about about the challenges that organizations have from a customer-centric perspective.
Right.
You know, and just before the break, we were chatting a little bit about, well, how do you manage the changes that actually go on within an organization? Because you can't follow everything by structure. You know, I think that's sort of where we dropped it off, right?
Yeah, I think you need some element of structure, obviously, and process, because you can't just be willy-nilly all over. But if you blend that understanding of the customer externally with the internal delivery people in your organization, your staff, I hate the word human capital. With respect to those, it sounds like something you're going to use up, and we don't want to use up people.
I know, it's like it's dehumanizing the workforce. And we have a lot of words that we use that dehumanize people.
Yeah.
Right. And yet we say our biggest asset, our biggest resource, are people.
That's the most ironic piece about it.
I know.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
Well, it's just we're kind of chuckling because I mentioned the Frank Sinatra song "Love and Marriage," and it's, you know, people have often said, "What's more important, your employees or your customers?" And so many experts, back to your earlier comment about following the herd, so many experts say, "Oh, you have to take care of your employees first." Well, if you don't have customers, what do you need employees for? And conversely, once you get those customers, if your employees don't understand their purpose and really buy in, you're going to lose those customers.
Yeah, if they're
so
not
you
happy.
You can't have one without the other. Love and marriage.
I know. You know, it's love and marriage. There's another one, quoting an old sitcom TV show. Wasn't that right?
That was the theme song for Married with Children.
Married with Children. That's right. Love and marriage. It's interesting that you have that challenge, right? Because mm-hmm. on the one hand, you got to keep your customers happy. And the other hand, you got to keep your employees happy. And I'm agreeing with not calling them human capital. But then how do you make all of that work, right? Because there's always that internal, external, I don't want to say conflict, but tension, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
A great person that I worked for, one of my mentors way back in the video on cable days, said that the customer is not always right.
I agree.
But the customer is always the customer. So it's with that respect, and again, getting back to the comments you made about your father, it's that respect for somebody else that you use in any kind of dealings. And we've all read the books of sometimes you have to fire a customer or say, you know, thanks, it's been great doing business with you, but you're obviously going to be better served somewhere else. Helping your employees understand that at the right time, it's okay to do that.
Yeah.
And it's okay to, you know, draw a line in the sand. That's where you need to support them. It's making them feel comfortable making the decision that you would. And even if it wasn't 100% what you were going to do for that customer, but it was 90%, you still have to support them and say, great, the only adjustment I might have made would be X. Then the next time that employee knows what they can do and they understand that boundary. So rather than a very strict structured process within the values of the organization, people know this is what I can operate within, and then they can use their smarts, intelligence, wisdom, etc., to make great decisions for the customers and for the company.
And it sounds to me like you're almost training your employees on a variety of different levels, right? And I know one of the things in working with different clients, and that we often talk about how do we make better business decisions. Well, that doesn't just happen at the leadership level, but that happens at the operational level. level, the front staff level, you know, within the confines or constructs of where they can make decisions, you know. And so it's interesting that you would actually bring that on, because that's the first thing I thought about, is how do you train people into making better customer-based decisions and recognizing that sometimes you almost have to walk away from a deal in order to make a deal. And that's okay.
Absolutely it is. I'll use, again, a customer service, an angry customer, and you're looking to give some sort of credit back to them. Sometimes, and leaders would say, because they're comfortable making $1,000 and $1 million decisions, they'll say to the employees, oh yeah, within this amount, you can give them a credit to $100.
Yeah.
But some employees, for them to make a $100 decision in their personal life is a big deal. And if they really are engaged with the organization, they might say, oh my gosh, I don't feel like we should be justified giving that customer $100, but it would be the right thing. So it's helping them understand that, listen, I'm grateful that you care so deeply about the company, but let's just put a little bit of balance in here. You'll make a good decision for the customer who will be happy. You'll be happy because you were able to make that decision. You were supported by the leadership team, and you keep moving forward and growing, and you'll get better and better on an ongoing basis.
Yeah, it's interesting you would say that, because I'm going to put this to more of an internal perspective, right? We're really talking about serving the external customer, but then you also have customers internally within your organization. And I know a lot of people really struggle with the idea that the person down the hall in the other department, you know, they actually might be my customer too. You know,
yes.
They're your coworker, but they're also your customer, and vice versa in that. And it's a concept that people really struggle with. But I was at I was having a meeting with a manager one time, an oil and gas company that I was working with. And I guess it just was announced by the senior management that they had to actually save money, right? They were in a situation where, you know, they're going to cut down costs and everything. And one of the employees was put in that situation where, oh my gosh, they're going to spend like $25 or maybe it was $500 on a piece of software, right? And so they came into the manager's office while I was sitting there saying that basically, you know, I'm going to cancel this order and everything. It's the best decision for us because the company needs to save money. Well, meanwhile, that piece of software actually saved the company money.
Right.
Right. It was one of those who didn't quite understand the connection between saving money, making good decisions, and making good business decisions.
That's a great point. I was actually having this very similar conversation with a colleague and business partner yesterday, and we talked about understanding the job to be done for a person. And when you look at an internal department, I'll use IT with respect because I have great friends in IT and clients as well. Sometimes in the past, you go to IT and say, I need this. Let's consider it a report, for example. And often the first question you get back from them is, why do you need it?
Yeah.
Instead of saying, what are you trying to know or learn or accomplish with that? Which would be a much better question. And that can apply to so many other areas dealing with your colleagues internally in an organization. It's not, what do you need that for? It's, oh, what are you trying to do?
Yeah. Because what are you trying to achieve?
Right.
Yeah.
You may think that's what you need, but if I understand what you're trying to do, I may have a better suggestion, or I can very clearly say, absolutely, and we can get it done by such and such a time and give you what you need.
Well, the interesting thing with that is in business analysis training, like actual applied training, I'm not talking about theoretical, right? Mm-hmm. One of the things that one of the top questions that you have to answer is, what is the benefit of this?
Yes.
Right? That's the question,
yep.
Right? So it's not about, you know, well, why do you need this or blah, blah, blah. What's the benefit of this? Like, well, here's the features, here's the benefits. Okay, now what's the value of that? You know, and it's a simple question, but I find that people don't always ask it.
No, they don't. And there's Clay Christensen is a Harvard professor, and a number of years ago he wrote a book, and it was about this jobs to be done theory. And there's a consultancy in the U.S., Strategen, and they've created this approach that it is understanding the job to be done. And so what they do is they'll look at exactly what even a clerk, an accounting clerk, is trying to accomplish so that the provider of something, let's call it software, would really understand all of the different steps the person is going through. And that's where they can create advantages compared to somebody else. And it's not until you get to that level of understanding what the person's doing that you can offer a better solution.
Yeah. You know, and that is one of the big challenges, right, that
yes.
we actually have. I find this whole area quite fascinating when we're looking at challenges and adapting and helping. In this case here, we're being very customer focused. Mm-hmm. You know, is there any dynamics on the customer side that we should be thinking of?
Well, I think that in this global economy, I get frustrated when people say that today customers have more opportunities to say no to organizations. Customers have always been able to vote with their wallet. They can just now access information a lot sooner and make decisions quicker. But there's more competition. Sometimes you don't know that organizations are your competition. If you're a recreational option for people. Disney's your competitor, Beagle, but I don't have a theme park. No, they're getting the share of your potential customer's wallet.
Yeah.
Sometimes organizations don't look at everybody else that might be taking a piece of your customer's wallet and what that might be compared to what you're getting out of that customer's wallet. Are they taking some of yours, none of yours, or more than they should?
So maybe when we come back, what we should talk about is getting a piece of your customer's wallet.
Sure.
Sure, we'll talk a bit about that.
Every business wants.
Yeah, we'll be right back. Everyone, welcome back. I'm hanging out with Tim Kist, and we are talking a bit about, basically about performance. And just before the break, we were just joking a little bit about the customer's wallet. And really, that was sort of a setup for talking about marketing, you know, and from a customer-centric perspective, I guess.
But I think it was Peter Drucker who aptly said, marketing is defined as finding out what your customer wants and delivering it to them at a profit.
Okay.
It might have been him or it might have been somebody else, but over the years, Drucker's had so many great quotes. With respect, I may be wrong, but it's a great quote that defines it. If you're in business, you need to be profitable. You need to stay in business. There's nothing wrong with that. It's not an evil thing.
The interesting thing about that is when I talk about profit, and I want to just sort of talk a little bit about this, because I'll be working with a client, right? And maybe there'll be a half a dozen in the room, the owner and plus the managers and stuff, because I work now these less in the big corporate stuff, more focused on small to mid-range organizations, a lot more fun. Mm-hmm. But when I ask, what's important here, some people will actually answer profit. What does he want to focus on? But when I do ask overall what's important, they rarely say profit. What's the purpose? They'll actually tell me, well, so that we can create jobs, or we can do this, we can do that. So there's usually a connection with profit to business owners that's beyond just profit. And I think most people miss that. When you're dealing with micro enterprises or mid-range enterprises, there's usually a greater connection to some other good that's going on.
Right.
And I think that's missed sometimes with my clients anyway.
I would agree with you on the whole in particular as well, because if you just focus on profits, it's like the salesperson that is just anxious every month about their
next
quota.
Sale. Yeah.
It's the process that what's getting you there. For organizations, one of the things, when you look at their income statement, I use this one and say, I'll take a look at where you're spending your money. And that will tell me what's important to you.
Yeah.
And the same thing for leaders or anybody in an organization. Let me look at how you spend your time. That will tell me what's really important to you.
Yeah.
Now, you can assess that and say, you're spending a lot of time in this area. And if that's what you think is important, sure, keep going. But if it's not, then you need to make some adjustments and go there.
It's interesting. We're going to talk about marketing. But now we're talking about the financial side of business and using numbers to figure out what people really see as important. And you know what? It's funny you would put it into that context, because I know I did a show at one point in time that was all about the numbers don't lie. And they tell you a lot. 3 years of financials of any business tells you a lot about that organization.
Sure.
And when you put it into that context, and when I think about all the clients I've worked with, just like you have, just all the stories that we've heard, because we hear one story and the numbers sometimes paint a very different one, and then where's the disconnect, right?
Well, absolutely. And the other thing is that when you look at 3 years of financials to paint a picture, it's a picture that's already been done.
Oh, yeah.
So it's
lagging,
something, it's
lagging.
Absolutely lagging.
Lagging indicators.
It's activities of people that have created those numbers.
Oh, yeah.
So it's the activities of the customers that purchasing that service to some level or extent that has driven the opportunity for the revenue that has created everything else downstream.
And the decisions that have been made.
Right.
Whether good or bad.
Absolutely.
And even with those numbers, you can then see the picture painted for what's happening marketing-wise.
Yep. And it drives back to the current VP of marketing with IBM has a quote, something like, if you think you're data driven, but your data does not reflect the people, i.e. your customers, then you're not properly customer focused.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So here's a tech giant in IBM, and if they're not really understanding their customers to that level, then this guy doesn't believe that they're truly customer focused.
But there's another piece on that one. I had this happen with, okay, so you're talking tech. So I had this happen with a major transportation company. Again, senior executive, mm-hmm. right, on the phone.
Right.
And we were talking about data and quote unquote, Richard, we have lots of data. All we need to do is have you tell us what to do with it. End quote. Right. Yeah. So in other words, there's so much information available. You need to know what's important and right. be able to pick it so you can make better decisions in your business.
And we had kind of talked a little bit off air and in prep for today's discussion too about what you're looking at trying to solve.
Sure.
So once you know the problem you're trying to solve, then you're looking for the data that's going to support that. Not that you're trying to take your data necessarily and force it into a conclusion, but you're trying to take a path that says, is this real data? Is it complete data? Have I absolutely looked at enough sources to make sure that I understand the context in which the data is collected? Have I properly structured those darn Survey Monkey questions, not like the options that are given me in the generic one, but have I maybe spoken to a good market research person to properly structure my sentences and get a real answer rather than a contrived one that's trying to drive me to the solution that I think exists in my own mind?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's all really good stuff. Yeah. I mean, I think that's part of the challenges that business owners actually have, you know, and
right.
and when I think business owners, sometimes I'm thinking about the lone person in their office at home working from home or because they're a business owner
right.
or they have a half a dozen people or a dozen people or 25 or 150. I mean, I think it's always the same challenge.
I would totally agree with you. It's just a question of scale.
Yeah,
and
totally.
And you're right. You're dealing with the same kinds of issues on a regular basis.
Yeah, you are. I know that during one of the breaks, I want to go back to this whole idea of marketing. And to be honest with you, Tim, I'm not quite sure how to actually phrase the question. But I know that you have a marketing background. I know you're writing in the marketing space.
Right.
And there's a connection with some studies that you've done or have read on too.
Right. Well, it's the Ruthless Self-Promotion, first Saturday in every month now with the Winnipeg Free Press. I'll have a column in there called Marketing Matters. And this whole study of the customer culture, again, it's something that in the last couple of years I've been a little bit more obsessed. And I was the instructor for Intro to Marketing for the Extended Ed. And then I did the content development for it. And it really forced me to just drive back down to the basics and understand that classic 4 P's approach, but say, how does the customer fit into this? And that's real marketing. Marketing is understanding that customer. Steve Jobs used to talk about, I'm going to get something for the customer before they even know what it is. That was his definition
of
marketing.
Oh, yeah, very innovative. You know? Yeah.
And not many people look at it that way. So many other people are reactive and they'll look at lagging indicators rather than trying to understand behaviorally what customers are doing, where the other impacts are coming in from. One of the key aspects of marketing is assessing what's going on around you. And we talked about the PESTEL, the political, economic, social, technology, legal, and environmental areas that you need to assess that could be affecting your business and could be impacting your customers.
You know, the PESTEL is such a great tool. And we're using an acronym. And for those listening, if you're not familiar with it, it's PESTLE.
Correct.
Yeah. And you can look it up, just do a quick search, connects really nicely with what's called a SWOT, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And in a planning perspective for any organization as consultants, and that's what we are,
right.
You know, that's some of the tools we use, right, to actually help clients out. If somebody wanted to get in touch with you, how would they go about doing that?
My email is tim@tk3consulting, tk3consulting.ca. On my website, all the information is there as well, tk3consulting.ca. So those are the two best ways to get a hold of me.
Yeah, yep. And watch for your upcoming articles. Okay, awesome guest, awesome topic.
Awesome host, thank you.
You're very kind. You're always too kind to me, Tim. If you had a final thought for listeners, what might it be?
It's to study people. and watch them and understand them, both those inside and outside your organization, and be aware. Try not to keep the blinders on, and just be fair to people. I think we get back to your dad's comment and just say, be kind to people.
Yeah. He said, get out of your own way.
Well, you get out of your own way, but you can do that by being kind and respectful and being aware of what's going on around you rather than being really focused on yourself.
Awesome. Well, Tim, thanks a lot for joining
me.
My
pleasure.
All right. You're a great guest. No doubt I'll have you on again. We'll figure out another topic for you sometime in the future. Listen, if you've been listening into this show, I want to thank you for tuning in. We sort of covered off a wide gamut of things that might be of interest to you from a business perspective, maybe career or personal life. And, if you have a thought, a question or idea, just send me an email at richard@setforsuccess.ca. And do remember to do your best, invest in the success of others, and make your journey count.